Kings 21 tonight. 1 Kings 21 and the first 16 verses we'll consider. We're skipping chapter 20. Seems to be about a three-year period of time in which Israel was fighting Ben-Hadad and the Syrians. They'd come up against Ahab and went on for some time. Elijah seems to have no part in this. It's chapter 20 here, so we'll just go to chapter 21 and pick up again on a story that has most important aspect to the prophet. I'll get there in a minute. I had it on in the wrong spot there. All right, we got it to chapter 21. And it came to pass after these things, that is, after all that had taken place and transpired in chapter 20, that Naboth, the Jezreelite, had a vineyard, which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, King Ahab of Samaria. Must have been a boundary line. The property that housed the palace and then the vineyard of this dear old Hebrew, Naboth. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, "Give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house, and I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it. Or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money." Seems like a pretty good proposition, don't it? He probably would have given him even more than the thing was worth. But there's a catch here. There's a sentimental catch to this thing. There's an aspect in which those ancient Jews, those ancient Hebrews, were very, very attached to, very sentimental. And Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid it me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers," that's fathers in the plural there, it had been handed down generation after generation. Don't mean much today, does it? But it meant something back then. I got that little old place over in Woodland, Alabama. I don't know what's going to happen to it after I die. But I hope somebody in my family takes it up. Somebody carries it on. That's the only thing I've got. Worked all my life for what I've got there. And I'd like somebody in the family to take it on. I don't know where that'll happen or not. I guess y'all have to wait and see. It won't make any difference to me after I'm gone with it. But anyway, it has a real sentimental aspect to it, passing it down to the next generation. Like, we need to pass some kind of a legacy down to the next generation, don't we? I want to pass down one great legacy I know, and that's my blessed relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. I want somebody to take advantage of that. Somebody, you know, the grandson-in-law. Now I've got great grandchildren. Just somebody take it up and carry it on. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. Pouting. This is the kind of man we're talking about here. Now, he's the top man in Israel. He's the king. He's the leader. A poor leader he must be. Yeah. I didn't say that. I can't because this thing goes out all over the world. they got their eyes and ears open on us preachers now. We got to be careful of them. All right. He goes on and says in verse number 5, but Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said to him, why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread? He says unto her, because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, give me thy vineyard for money, or else, if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. Didn't explain to her why, did he? Didn't explain to her that this heritage aspect was there. Didn't talk about that at all. Just left that out. Didn't mean nothing to it. Didn't mean a thing in the world to it. Certainly wouldn't mean anything to Jezebel. Just bypasses that. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread. Let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth. I know how to get it done. Jezreelite. I'll take care of this matter. She's probably taken care of a lot of matters for Ahab. Don't you figure she had? She probably ran the kingdom. She brought all those false gods and false prophets from Zidon into the northern nation there, the northern part of the kingdom of Israel. She brought all that false worship in there. That was her doings. And here's, he said nothing against it at all, knowing that it would bring judgment upon the people, knowing that God would not condone that sort of thing. But being the mouse that he was, not the man, he let her run the show. Goes on now, let me read a little bit further. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in his city dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters saying, proclaim a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. And set two men, sons of Belial, wicked men, before him, to bear witness against him, saying, thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him, that he may die, and the men of his city, even the elders and the nobles, who were the inhabitants of his city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them. And as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them, they proclaimed a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and set before him, and the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him, was stoned, and he died. Then they went to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth was stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite, which he refused to give thee for money. But Naboth is not alive, but dead. It came to pass, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, and Ahab rose up to go down to the vineyard of Naboth, and the Jezreelite to possess of it. Take possession of it. Well, here's the dastardly deed that's done. Took a man's life to get it. But what's a life? What's a life to a wicked man like Ahab? To a wicked, wicked woman like Jezebel? Life is nothing. Means nothing. This is a corrupt leader. A corrupt leader that God had warned against way back in the book of Deuteronomy. When they picked their leaders, they were to pick righteous men and to rule in righteousness. And that, you know, that law still is intact today. Throughout this world, God still rules the world. This is his world. He still has laws in place that no man, no matter what they do, no matter how they try to legislate against these laws and tear them down, destroy them, they're still written, etched in stone. And men pay the price when they violate them. It's constantly paying the price. They don't get away with it. He's not going to get away with this. He's not going to get away with them. We'll see a prophecy here just in a little while. The final prophecy, really, of the prophet Elijah. And you know, it was 10 years after Elijah made that prophecy and was carried away into heaven in the chariots of fire before it actually came true. It actually came to pass 10 years later. Well, that tells us something about the judgment wheels of God. They turn off of slow, but they never cease turning. They're always turning. They're always catching up. They catch up after a while. This one, that one, the other, they'll catch up. And God will do what's right. He's a righteous God. The judge of the earth, of all the earth, will do what's right. I'll guarantee you that. It'll catch up after a while. One of the commentators pointed out that of all the Ten Commandments, all the ten words which we refer to as the Ten Commandments that were given to Moses on Mount Sinai, it is the last one which is the most searching. You know what the last one is? Thou shalt not covet. That's the last. That's the tenth. Thou shalt not covet. Several things are mentioned there that you shall not covet. But covetousness, it applies to everything. And this writer said, it is the last one which is the most searching because the most spiritual and the nearest to the new law of the Sermon on the Mount, New Testament law. One also said this. It was a searching and spiritual commandment, for it dealt with the soul of man, his private thoughts and feelings and desires. That's what covetousness deals with, the inward part of us, the conscience, the soul. Goes on and said, For these, says the Ten Commandments, or the Ten Commandment, and not, or the Tenth Commandment, let me back up here, and not merely for your actual deeds, you are answerable to God. See, we judge each other by what we see. You know, it's whatever, what's out here. We only know what you do as we see this. We don't know what's in the heart. You don't know what's in my heart. You don't know. But God does. And so that tenth commandment, that covetousness, which is a seed in the heart, we're judged for. God can judge that. This thing was in the heart of Ahab before the actual deed was ever committed. It was already there. Let me give you three or four or five things right here, right quickly, in way of enlarging the lesson and developing this. God's way is to strike sin at its root, at its very root. To kill it, as it were, the very root of the disease. You know, we have a tendency. We do. We all, by nature, we do this, folks. I hope you're honest with yourself and I hope you listen to what I'm saying. We, by nature, we have a tendency to dally with evil suggestions, to play with unclean thoughts. We have a tendency to do this. We ought to put them out of our mind immediately, but we're prone to play around a little bit. That's the nature of man. David, this is our David. went out on that veranda, that terrace. And he should have been away with his men at war. That the king's kings went to war, but he sent Joab. He sent Joab, and to take care of the situation in a major battle, and he stayed home. That was a fatal mistake. He went out to cool himself in the evening air, and there a woman was bathing. That was a common thing. Common thing. She was bathing, no clothes, nude. David cast his eye upon her. But David could have immediately turned, and if the thought and the suggestion came, and it did come. It comes to our mind when temptation flashes by. It comes to your mind. But if David, and we learn a lesson there, God help us to practice that thing. If he had turned immediately, went back into his chamber, and prayed unto the Almighty God, give me grace that this thing might be erased from my mind, you wouldn't have had all that deceit, lying, murder, adultery, all those things that accumulated. See, one little thought, one little suggestion by the wicked one can bring on an accumulation of sins that just seem to have no end. But he didn't, did he? No. He looked, and he looked, and then he took a man's wife. Covetousness. Coveting that which was not his. He had 8 wives. Why another? That should have been sufficient. Well, that's man. That's the tendency that we have to dally in with evil suggestions and to play around with unclean thoughts. God help us to put them away, to toy with the unchaste or dishonorable desires. And there's something else. There's something to man that's fascinating in this bargain we're talking about here, by which he consents to outward respectability at the price of inward license. You know, we work at this. We want folks to really respect us, and we labor to keep this up out here. And yet, sometimes we'll let stuff come into our heart and brood over those things because it's unseen. And we think we can get away with that. But it is seen. God sees it. Always sees it. Nothing's ever hid from the Almighty God. You understand what I'm talking about? And look, when I'm preaching to you, this finger here, I got how many pointing back here? 3 of them. I'm preaching to me. And I always preach the message that I preach to you, to myself, before I preach it to you. I'm just telling you, I'm just confessing to you most of the time what I know you deal with, because I have to deal with it. I'm a man just like you. Just like you. By the grace of God only, I am what I am. Sinner that is saved by his grace. But as his uncleanness of water, contaminated water, bears the evidence that the spring has been defiled up the stream. Water's unfit to drink here because somebody has defiled, or something has defiled, the fountainhead. Well, that's it. The fountainhead, the natural heart, the natural inclinations that man, self and you, is born. The things sometimes we practice comes out of that heart. Man does it out of his heart. And so that is the source of the mischief. Another thing, Ahab played with fire here. He did. He played with fire. He gets burned. He does. We'll see that later on. He gets burned, and it's a fatal burn. No recovery from it. But he's playing around with fire here. He had wronged Naboth already in his heart. That was in his heart when he went down there and said, "Give me your vineyard." That was a no-no. He knew that that was an inheritance that old man had. He knew that. That was probably neighborhood news. Everybody knew it around Jezreel. So it's already in the heart. It was a small thing that he should go further now and get into the wrong of the fact, do the deed. That was a small thing. Things already there. You know, there's sinners, and then there are sinners. There is a covetousness that hides defeat in assumed smiles. Uh-oh. Sorry. They do it again, didn't it? All right. It won't be as bad as that fella preaching that funeral and went off and he took his phone out and answered it. Wasn't thinking clearer than that. I wouldn't have brought that in here. All right, where did I get to here? I said there's a covetousness less formidable and more contemptible that pouts and fumes and frets and sulks, and that's what we see here in Ahab. That was his style of covetousness. He couldn't hide it. He just went into his chamber there and turned his face to the wall, refused to eat. Such depression had come over him because he didn't get what he wanted. You know, I mentioned the first reaction that some have. You know, man, some men can be defeated in what they really covet. It's a no-no. They can't receive it. And they'll smile and make you think, well, that's okay. That's all right. We'll just let it go by. But in the heart, it's still there. But old Ahab couldn't hide it, could he? No, sir. Another thing, I think it very likely that Ahab was not meditating any serious misconduct at this time. I don't think he was thinking about death, about destroying this fellow at this particular time. He was just sick that he couldn't get what he wanted. But he wanted what he wanted and was at wit's end as to how to obtain it. So there he lays, sulking, there he lays, fuming and pouting, fretting over what he can't get. But oh my, he was very blessed, wasn't he? Or better still, I guess, cursed. To have a sly, wicked accomplice. I looked that word up, Mr. Noah Webster, to see exactly what that entailed as a noun. He said, an associate in a crime, a partner or partaker in guilt. So he had a good one here, didn't he? He had one that wouldn't stop at anything. A woman, a wife, as wicked as possibly could be. What's the old proverb? Hell has no vengeance save that of a woman. Woman out of sorts. Meanest thing in the world. Nothing surpasses that. No, ladies, I'm not getting on to you. I'm just telling you what. I told you what I am by nature. I'm telling you what you are. Okay. It's just there. There again, you see, we appreciate the grace of God. That makes us thankful for the grace of God, right? Yeah. And there are hundreds of men and women, outwardly respectable and innocent of gross sin, yet if we could see their hearts and the conspiracies at work in those hearts, shake us to the very foundation of our being. It would. I've said time before, and made this so clear, I hope, I'm so glad that I don't know all of what men think about me. I'm thankful I don't know what's in their hearts. Pastoring for nearly 50 years, I tell you what's the truth. I've seen things come to pass that had been there for God knows how long, you know. Finally came to the surface, you know. There it is. I didn't know, having any idea about it. There it was. And I'm glad I didn't. I'm sure glad that I didn't. And I said, I've pastored some over the years. I think about one in particular. 18 years I pastored a fellow. Did everything I could to promote him and encourage him. And all the time, this very thing we're talking about here, this sin of covetousness, that he coveted. He coveted. I mean, he wanted the position. And he stayed around until finally somebody came by to fan the spark that was in the heart and to combust the flame. And all of a sudden, there it was. There it was. And you don't know what I'm talking about, so I can talk about this. There it was. It's had one particular accomplice to come by and take part in a conspiracy. It hadn't been for the grace of God. I mean, we know we went through this thing when the church was fairly well full. You know, had a pretty good crowd here. And the Lord was so good to us. There was a direct attempt to split the church. God was merciful to us, kept us together. And the fellow and his accomplice went on their way, empty-handed. Didn't gain a thing out of it, but suffered great. You don't know about it. You don't know. I do. Things come back around. What's saying? Things that go around, they come around. After a while, came back around. Terrible, terrible suffering. The fellas died. A terrible death. An awful death. Yeah. God takes care of things in his own time. He knows the heart. He knows what's been working there all along. So the heart in its nature is dry to the roots. It is. No sap of honor and manly feeling is in that heart by nature. No love of justice penetrates and invigorates that fallen heart, that natural heart. Now think about this. Now while Ahab's heart lies there inflamed, enters the temptress. Here she comes. With a due supply of sparks, cunningly contrived for the purpose of an explosion. Here she comes. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, "Why, you're the governor of the kingdom. Why are you sitting here sulking and depressed and refusing to eat your food? Let me take care of this thing. I know how to do it. I've done other things for you. I'll take care of this dastardly thing." So here she comes with a plan. She got it all. I mean, just like that, she had it all figured out. Where'd that come from? Came out of that wicked heart, didn't it? It was there all the time. I don't know how long Ahab been wanting that vineyard. I'm sure he had discussed this thing with Jezebel time and time again. He'd been coveting that thing, not just yesterday, but many days and many months, maybe some years before. He wanted that vineyard. for a garden of herbs. Just didn't know how to get it done. She already had it figured out. Just let me handle it. Let me handle it. The most deadly weapons, somebody said, are made of the finest steel. Here's one right here. Jezebel's character was strong, firm, cold, passionless, cruel, hard. Hard as steel. She didn't have a heart. Nothing there that was, nothing there that was pliable. It was like a stone. Hard as steel. Sharp as a dagger's edge. Ready to be used at any time. And this was the opportunity. Yeah. You know, the words had not left old Ahab's lips a moment. It doesn't appear here. Before her plan was made. It's like that. Her plan was made. Treachery. Murder. Came as natural to her as breathing. You know, that is for folks. Some folks, it don't bother them a bit. Who they hurt, who they trample over. How bad they hurt them doesn't bother. Some folks, it don't bother them one bit in this world. They go on about their business. They have no heart. Nothing penetrates it. And you notice this, she didn't dream of entrusting this task to her husband, for whom she probably held contempt for old Ahab for a long time, because he wasn't a man. Most women want a man, they don't want a mouse. They want somebody to lead, don't they? Remember that, fellas. Women, naturally, this is part of their heritage. This is what it comes out of their creation, the created being. They want somebody, some man, to lead. That's so. But he was a mouse and not a man. So she herself laid the deadly plan, and she fired it, firing a cannon that was to send Naboth, the humble Hebrew, to eternity and give a vineyard to her wicked husband Ahab. Got it done. Finally, and I'll quit here, so little. The little sin of covetousness has found its reward. The coveted object is obtained. He's got it in his grasp, as he is. Ahab was in the very hands of evil, though, holding this obtained, coveted possession. He had placed himself, I think, there, and like every man, a woman who consents to sin, he was no longer his own master. If we ever consent to it, we're no longer in control. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit. Paul gives us that so clearly. One of the fruits of the Spirit is godly self-control, staying in control of the matter. I used to teach my boys this in the natural sense. I told my boys as they were growing up and getting into teenage years, bear witnesses, I said, boys, always be your own man. Be in control. Don't let others control you. Just make sure that you're on top of this thing. It's so easy, you know. So easy. I've been out there in spots, but before God ever saved me, back when I was a teenager and running wild, you know, and there was just certain things I wouldn't do. Wasn't because I was afraid to do them. I just wouldn't do them because I had somebody trying to pressure me. Come on, let's do this. Come on, let's do that. No, I said, I'm not going to do it. And I dared them to call me chicken. Just don't do it. I didn't do it because I didn't want to do it. Wasn't going to have somebody pressure me into doing it. So stay on top of things. Ahab wasn't that kind of man. Man up, Ahab. No, he's not going to man up. He's going to bow to this. Subjectively, he's going to bow to this wife. This wicked wife. And he paid for it. In the long run, he paid for it. If he'd been a giant, somebody said, instead of the weak creature that he was, he could not have stayed the course of this crime. If he'd been a man, he couldn't have done that. But he was weak. Weakness is what brings this sort of thing on. It's caving in. But as we shall see, as old R.G. Lee preached that most famous sermon, it's probably been preached 1,000 times, still going about on CD after the old man's dead. Payday someday. Payday someday. It came. It came. And it always does. All right, we'll stop there.